check. Check, check, 1, 2. Davey D hanging out with you this afternoon. And sitting in front of me, he's somebody who's all about town. He's doing big things in the city of New Orleans, the Big Easy, Sin City as they call it. He's the one and only Cess 4-5 out of the 9th Ward. He's one of the people that organized and led the big march that kicked off the Hurricane Katrina and Rita International Tribunal. How you doing, Cess?
I'm doing pretty good. It's good to be here. I'm feeling good. Right now we live at the tribunal going on in New Orleans, 2007. So, yeah, I'm feeling real good. It was a good march, you know what I'm saying? And the tribunal is going off without a hitch. So I'm good right now.
How do you feel 2 years after the aftermath of Katrina? Things, have they improved? Do you see a light at the end of the tunnel? Or, you know, do you get angry?
Well, definitely, like, looking back at the whole situation, you know, me personally, you know, like I said, I feel good at this particular moment where I'm at right now. But as for my people, well, we definitely not good. We definitely in, we pretty much we in the same place and predicament we were in 2 years ago, but we worse off. You know what I'm saying? So me, my situation is different because I have a different drive and resilience. But, you know, most people who put in this situation, they're not able to, you know, just think properly, you know what I'm saying, and be able to bounce back as people would think normal people should. But, you know, if you're looking at the devastation and you're looking at people's lives being, you know, uprooted and being displaced and put in different cities and stuff, you know, it's going to take a lot for you to, you know, become sane again or become whole again. And I think that's the biggest thing with our people, you know what I'm saying. We not really, we haven't been able to get whole, you know, so that's the biggest thing with this situation we're dealing with.
You know, you hit up on a key topic talking about that mental well-being. You know, the day that you led the march, I was talking to a sister there. I'm going to remember her name, but, you know, she had lost her daughter, you know, when the levees broke or were exploded. She said they were blown up and, you know, lost everything. And, you know, just listening to her tell the story and being out there, you know, I'm fighting to hold back tears, you know, and I'm sitting there like looking at her and the family, and they just seem like, you know, like they just could maintain. And I'm asking myself, how were so many people able to maintain when there's been no support, unless there's something I don't know about? I mean, it doesn't seem like the city, the government, you know, have come along and asked y'all how y'all doing and helped y'all try to heal.
Well, yeah, we have no choice, actually. You know what I'm saying? It's like, okay, well, you've been in this disaster. The government is not responding. You know, African people across the country not responding. You know, your city and state and local officials not responding. You know what I'm saying? So it's survival mode. You know what I'm saying? And so where we at this point, you know, our back's against the wall. It's like, okay, well, either you can keep crying about it or you can try to, you know, move on yourself. And that's what we're doing. We're trying to gather up the pieces ourselves and just move on and move forward with a strong face for our kids and for our, you know, grandparents and stuff like that. So, but of course, no one is aiding in our situation with the Katrina devastation and the, you know, the Hurricane America, which they call it Katrina. No one is aiding in that situation to help us get our lives back together. So we have to do it ourselves. And like I said, we just have to put our feelings and our emotions and our burdens on a back burner and deal with the problem that we have today, which is our basic needs, our basic necessities, you know what I'm saying? Getting a roof over your head, making sure, you know, your kids in school and everybody have clothes on their back and food in their mouth. So we came on, and we came, even though we had a great loss and a huge loss, you know, just time and life don't permit us time to mourn. We have to deal with those things that's at hand right now.
Let me ask you this. You know, you being from the 9th Ward, can you describe what it was like before Katrina and what it's been like afterwards?
Okay, the 9th Ward, we had a few different communities, like within the 9th Ward. We have the upper 9th Ward, We have the lower Ninth Ward, and the upper Ninth Ward is mostly like apartments, double houses, you know, in projects also. We had two housing developments, the Desire Project and the Florida Project. But the Ninth Ward is the biggest ward in the city.
Now, how far is that from the French Quarters and Bourbon Street and all that, which, you know, everybody knows New Orleans from?
Okay. It's about 10 minutes from the French Quarters of Bourbon Street. And the lower Ninth Ward is almost a community within its own. That's how big it is. The Ninth Ward can be a whole nother city if you took it off Orleans' map. Okay, that's how big it is, it just in square miles. But the lower Ninth Ward was consisted of mostly homeowners, and you have thousands of square miles of just residents and homeowners, and we had like driving communities. You know what I'm saying? We had business owners. We had you know, schools. A lot of schools are closed down now. You know what I'm saying? So right now, we have like just abandoned areas where neighbors and neighborhoods were, communities were. Now there's nothing there. They have one person on the block. You know, you have like a full block area with about 40 families, maybe 10 homes per block. And that's only one block. Now we have literally hundreds of blocks, almost thousands of blocks where people live, you know, that's empty now. So everything is stagnated. The process and the progress that our community would have, it's been stagnated from 2 years ago. The advance in our culture and our music and entertainment and our education and all of those things that a community make up has been stagnated. And now those areas, the ground is not being cultivated, you know, where people grow their own food and fruits and things of that nature. So, like, we had thriving communities before Katrina, you know, where a lot of families were. But now it's literally nothing. We got areas that's just waiting for developers to come, you know, buy and grab up the land right now.
That's what seems to be the game plan, is to make way for the Donald Trumps of the world.
Well, yeah, Donald Trump already here. He already done claimed his area. You know, he already got a area already, you know, paid for, where the Trump Towers would be, you know, coming up already.
Wait, are you serious? So he got an area in the Ninth Ward?
Well, it's not in the Ninth Ward. It's in, you know, the CBD, the Central Business District, you know, around Canal Street. But I'm pretty sure he have him some land in the Ninth Ward also.
You know, you're an artist out here. And one of the things that New Orleans is known for is his artists. I mean, the tradition of the jazz and Zydeco players and what have you. But, you know, for many of us that are listening, New Orleans got put on the map because of the hip-hop. You know, the Lil Wayne's, Master P's, Cash Money, and all that. How have they responded to Katrina? I mean, I ran into Master P the other day, and I run into him from time to time. He always talks about New Orleans and doing relief efforts, and, you know, Cash Money and them have said stuff. I know Juvenile did his video in the Ninth Ward, and we also had Lil Wayne did a song, you know. But I mean, but have they been able to collectively pool their money to do something significant, or have they been curtailed? And I'm asking this from the standpoint of understanding that Baby from Cash Money wanted to buy the one of the projects that they grew up in, Magnolia? Yeah, and they wouldn't let them. So can you comment on that relationship with those big-name artists that I mentioned in the recovery efforts?
Okay, yes. Yeah, New Orleans definitely is known for the music culture, you know, way back with Louis Armstrong and Fat Domino and just a lot of great legends we had, you know, the Kermit Ruffins. And, you know, we just have a lot of good legends, and a lot of those guys been able to become successful, you know, like the Master P's and Juveniles and Lil Wayne's and stuff like that. So, but I wouldn't ask for them to do something, you know, solely by themselves, like just to, you know, use they money solely, you know, because we have a lot of great needs, like, you know, over, you know, 300,000-400,000 people were displaced, you know what I'm saying? So no one person or one organization could, you know, make, you know, the whole Katrina thing whole or better. But with their celebrity, I think they definitely could have done more. Like Master P, we don't see him. He in Vancouver. He in Canada somewhere. You know, Baby and Lil Wayne, they live in Miami. You know what I'm saying? So all of their rebuilding dollars are going in Miami. You know what I'm saying? Now, Juvenile, he definitely a great artist and like the son of New Orleans. But, you know, his financial status is not to – you know, on a level of a, you know, a Baby or a Master P where he can, you know, just throw a lot of money into this city. But I think we have to, like, really get a bigger source. You know, I definitely think they could have used their celebrity a little more to bring aid to the situation because, you know, we had people like David Banner who like, really went hard for Mississippi and did benefit concerts in Atlanta and different, you know, parts of the city and, like, draw national attention to help the Gulf Coast, you know, recovery as it relates to Mississippi. So, of course, I think these artists could have done more, but I think once they got to a certain point, you know, it's still about making money and not really about lending their celebrity to the tragedy, you know what I'm saying? Because they may come down here and give out turkeys and think that's good, but for the people, you know, a turkey may feed them right now, you know what I'm saying? But if they don't have no stove to cook the turkey, you know.
You know, let's look beyond just those artists that I mentioned, and I'm glad you gave some light to that. But, you know, those artists are connected to, you know, I know they have their own labels, but they're also connected to larger labels. Universal Records, for example, on the largest label that's out there, 80% of the rap product comes off of, you know, out of their coffers. And considering the millions and maybe billions of dollars that these artists collectively have raised for those parent companies, have those record companies themselves looked at the value of New Orleans and said, you know, for years we've caked off of this city and their artistry. Let us give back the way that they did during the tsunami. If you remember, the music industry got together and they gave money for the tsunami victims. Did the music industry come and come together, you know, outside of the artists, just the music giants, you know, the Clive Davises of the world and the Jimmy Iovines and the Doug Morrises, you know, the people that own these labels, did they get together and show some sort of appreciation for, you know, the people and residents of this city that it have made them billions?
No.
You're a record store owner, so I'm going to ask you that. A lot of people don't know. It says 4-9 on a record store. So, I mean, you tell me, did they even give you a break on the records?
No. Yeah, you know.
Am I being facetious by asking that question? I mean, it's a legitimate question.
That's why I'm glad you asked those questions, but you know, my answer is real short. You know what I'm saying? It's a one-word answer. No, they didn't do anything. Now, I can tell you about this one program that kind of helped musicians out, which is called Music Care. You know, I'm not sure where the organization, I don't know where the foundation of the organization is, but they helped out artists. And, you know, it's kind of, it's crazy, but the people that they're helping out musically, is more of the second line bands, you know, they're not helping a hip hop artist. I put it in that way because, you know, certain people are connected and certain people, you know, they only want to help their people. You know, Harry Connick Jr. and all these people, they want, you know, make sure the jazz people get, you know, funds and stuff like that. But from the hip-hop aspect, you know, no one's, like, really trying to make sure we have shows, that we had homes and stuff like that. And if the Hot 8 brass band wasn't on when the levees broke, they probably wouldn't help those guys out either, you know what I'm saying? So, like, the music industry was cut off, you know, like New Orleans is kind of the birthplace of music, you know what I'm saying, with the jazz and everything, you know what I'm saying? So when you stop this big culture of music with the devastation with the hurricane, you know, you stop music, period. You know what I'm saying? You cut off the connect. And when these artists fed off the community, so that when the community disrupted, the music get disrupted. And but the most part of like what you were saying, man, no, none of the Clyde Davis didn't help. Universal didn't send no monies down here, no representative down here to represent them and find out where the needs of the musicians are. You know what I'm saying? Because we still have great artists that have never been heard, just like, you know, all the cities around the country. But in a devastation like this, someone should have came and said, well, okay, let me see what's going on with the entertainment side of things and help out.
Or even somebody like you who own a record store, they should have said, you know what, you know, sell these records, you know, what do we call them in the business, cleans. You know, come along and take a bunch of cleans, get yourself together over the next year. Don't worry about it. People don't know me. Cleans is how they inflate record sales for particular artists. So they go to a record store like Sess's to give him a bunch of cleans. He'll, you know, he'll sell these things and help boost up the numbers of our artists. But they should have just given that to you just to make sure your business was straight, period.
Right. And I have a business. My business is a new business. Nothing But Fire Records. We located at 1840 North Claiborne, and actually we the only record store in the city. And we opened up the early 2007. But I used all my own money. You know what I'm saying? This wasn't no money that people just gave me. I sold CDs out of the trunk of my car, and until I saved up enough to get a building, and then I just ordered from a distributor and got everybody else music. So I'm an artist that's still on the grind trying to, you know, make it. And I have a record company and a record label also, but I'm providing, you know, jobs, and I'm purchasing music from other people. And everything that we doing right now, the People's Hurricane Relief Fund with the Tribunal, it's coming from, like, out of our own pockets. They've been getting donations from other people and sponsors of the Tribunal, but we actually funding all this stuff on our own. So we really struggling, but we still striving because, like I said, ain't no record store in the city. So if I wouldn't have, you know, put my little money together to open up a store, you know what I'm saying, the people wouldn't have no place to get any music from. And music helps you keep it going. Music helps you keep stay sane. You know what I'm saying? So that's like a big part of rebuilding this city. You know, it's through the music. So people can go ahead and, you know, get it off their mind sometimes, you know, when they don't have a chance to emotionally express themselves.
And before we take a break, you know, let me just kind of be clear. When I'm bringing these examples up for the responsibility of those multi-billion-dollar corporations, you know, I'm not looking at them like they're doing some sort of charity work by helping out New Orleans. I'm looking at them saying, you've made billions of dollars off of New Orleans. That would be an investment. Like, you know, when your house got destroyed, you had to reinvest in your house and build the foundation. If the cornerstone of your business is black music and a significant percentage of it comes out of this region, you know, what's the investment back? You know, I mean, like you said, cats here in New Orleans are going to survive. Obviously, y'all are doing that. And, you know, we as black people always survive these tragedies. But at the same time, you know, to me, I think it should be put out there for everybody to just kind of look at and be like, you know, we can ask Master P and Cash Money those questions, and that's fair game. But also ask those people above Cash Money and those other guys above them, because they made whatever Cash Money made, them dudes made 10 times as much. And so if I'm going to ask Master P what he did, I'm going to ask Clive Davis the same question and expect 10 times as much, because he made 10 times the amount off the same artist. So that's something to think about. We're going to take a break and come back and continue our conversation here in New Orleans with my man, Sess49. We're back here, Davey D, hanging out with you this afternoon. Okay, what did I say, 5'4"?
4'9".
4'9", that's right. I'm sorry. We're back here, Davey D, hanging out with you. Here we are in New Orleans, and we're talking with Sess49, 4'5". You know what? I've been saying 4'9 all the time, but it's Sess45 because the 4 plus 5 equals 9. And I've just been saying 4'9", man, because I'm, you know, bad at the math. But let me ask you this. New Orleans, black city, black mayor, black police chief, black city council, a lot of them. How does the devastation that we've bore witness on the outside through news accounts, how can the devastation that we've been hearing, searing testimonies here at the Tribunal, how can all this have happened to black folks in New Orleans with a city that was 60 to 70% black with black leadership, how does the mayor allow this to happen? How does the city council allow this to happen? How does the police chief allow, you know, cops to shoot down people on bridges and, you know what I'm saying? How does this happen?
Well, I think it's really like being complacent with your position, you know what I'm saying? You know, as a black mayor, you know what I'm saying, you have this position and you're trying to go forward. You know, the mayor's position is not, you know, their biggest goal. Okay, so they sitting in bed with the rest of the politicians, you know what I'm saying? And instead of representing the people, you know what I mean, they want to make sure, okay, I can run for governor someday. You know what I'm saying? And so also, like, you know, trying to take care of family. Like, I think they have their interest, you know, first. You know what I'm saying? Well, okay, if I go hard and fight for the people, you know, I may lose my job, I'll lose my position. And so instead of living in this nice suburban area, I might have to go back to living in the apartment. You know what I'm saying? And so they don't want to go back to living in the apartment. So they'll go for the needs of these different lobbyists and stuff like that and make sure their agendas get, you know, put on the front burner. And same with the police chiefs and stuff like that, man. There's a new police chief. He got a new position, you know what I'm saying? So he don't want to go back to, you know, working the desk or getting back in the field. So whatever laws is put down in front of him. And there's another thing, too. I think they're only following a command. Somebody put an agenda in front of them. You know, whoever is the assistant for the mayors, they pretty much calling the shots. You just reading, you just doing what's on your itinerary, you know what I'm saying? And so the same with the police chief. Whatever is handed to him, you tell your police officers, go in this area and enforce this. If somebody tell me, okay, in the Ninth Ward, that's the high crime area, and I give my officers, you know, some paperwork, say go arrest as many people as you can in the Ninth Ward, that's what you got to do, because that's what you was told to do if you won't get your pay, you know what I'm saying? In this city, I'm not sure if this is the only city, but they go by police quotas down here. You have to have so many arrests in order to get a bonus. So it's not protect and serve. It's get these arrests so I can get bonus, so I can get my daughter and my wife a good Christmas present, you know.
One of the things I did hear about in New Orleans, and maybe you can confirm this city has the highest percentage of people who are arrested and are in jail for misdemeanors. You know, like, you know, I'm talking to people and they're like, man, they will send you to jail for 30 days if your car registration is expired.
Yeah, they take you to jail for misdemeanors all day, every day. Like this whole city economy is based off of tourism and incarceration. So the clerks, of course, the bail bonds, the lawyers, the judges, all of these people, the parking meters, they eat off the backs of the poor. You know, so if you're a single parent and you have, you know, two or three sons, one of those sons are going to get arrested because that's the culture of the police department. They're going to arrest. They're going to find a reason to arrest you. So you have to bind your child out. And so once you bind your child out, it costs money. And then once you bind them out, they got to go to drug court and go to see a judge, and you have to get a lawyer. And it's all on the single parent back. You know what I'm saying? They work in one job. They have other kids. They got rent. They got lights, things of that nature. But they still have to pay for a drug test, you know, if your child get arrested. You have to pay for the lawyer. If your child gets convicted, you have to pay court costs and things of that nature. So you just set back because of these officers come in your neighborhood and just detain or arrest your child for whatever reason they want to. And like I said, this city here, they eat off the backs of the poor through the judicial system.
How have you managed to navigate this system?
Well, I don't, man. I'm in this also. Man, I've been arrested maybe over 30 times in this city. Every black male in New Orleans has been arrested. Almost every, I would say about 80% of the males and maybe 40 to 50% of the females been arrested. You cannot come up in this urban city and not deal with the police officers. And that's a fact.
So you get a black mayor and you got that many people being arrested. I'm just trying to understand, you know, how, I mean, don't your heart bleed for your own people, or do people really get that callous that they can actually turn the blind eye and keep it moving.
Well, definitely. I told you it's about the interest of self. You know what I'm saying? People talk like they want to be for the people. But once they get these positions, and then once they, you know, they income bracket change, you know what I'm saying? And then, you know, once your income bracket change, you spend a little more. You know what I'm saying? So once you get this nice house and your wife got these nice jewelry and these nice furniture, she don't want to go back. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, you working for the wifey now. You know what I'm saying? You're not working for the people. You know what I'm saying? And also, you know, once you get into this office, even though it may be a black mayor, a black police chief, it's still white rule. You know what I'm saying? These white folks are still watching them with a fine-tooth comb. You know? Just like Councilman Thomas just got, you know, indicted for some corruption. You know, I'm not sure if y'all know about that, but you know, even though is a black man in office,
now, he's the one that holds the council seat for the city at large, right?
Yeah, he held the council seat. He don't hold it anymore, you know. But you know, even though the black people in office, man, the agenda of the white ruling class is still going forth. It don't matter who face is representing. It's like this was my brother told me, my brother Young Sino, you know what I'm saying, president of Nothing But Fire Records. He said, like with the situation with Obama and Hillary and Edwards and whoever runs for office, man, whoever wins, we lose. So if you think
break that down for us, why?
Okay. If Hillary win, black Africans in America lose, period. If Obama win, Africans in America lose. Because regardless of who win, if a black man is in office, that doesn't matter. The agenda of America or the white ruling class is still going forward. If Hillary win, the agenda of America and the white ruling class is going forward. And that goes for local, state, or federal. If you in a city that's predominantly black, and even though you may have a black mayor or a black governor, the white ruling class agenda is still going forward until we come together as Africans in America and do something about it.
That's real talk. We're going to take a break, come back, continue our conversation with Cess 4-5. We're back here, Davey D, hanging out with you in New Orleans, and we getting, you know, New Orleans 101 from my man Cess 4-5, local artist here. Puts it on. He's not only an artist, but he's an activist, an organizer, an entrepreneur, and, you know, represents the best of New Orleans. You know, one of the things that I've been noticing, and maybe you can comment on that, it seems like here in New Orleans that there's, I want to call it a caste system. You know, it really seems like that. And I don't know how to quite put my finger on it, but it definitely seems like, you know, like, for example, I went over to this other place the other day, and I saw Mayor Nagin there, and I saw a whole bunch of black folks, and I saw all them black folks stand up and cheer for him when he spoke. But then I'm over at the Ninth Ward, and, you know, cats seem like they ain't feeling them, you know what I mean? And it's like, and then you see, like, another echelon of people, and they seem like they not even connected to, you know, the folks from the Ninth Ward or the middle-class blacks that I saw at the Day of the Presence, you know, where you had Susan Taylor and all those people. It seemed like they're in a whole nother ball of wax. And then, you know, I know there's white folks around there. They don't seem to be on the ground anywhere, but obviously their presence is felt. So can you break down how the hierarchy works in the city and how deeply entrenched it is?
Well, you know, the hierarchy is really like, you know, upper class, middle class, and the poor, you know. You know what I'm saying? And really, they really like destroying the middle class. So it's really just upper class and the poor, you know what I'm saying? And we have two different versions of, you know, I guess, you know, some people want to celebrate, you know what I'm saying? Like, we having a memorial, they having a celebration. That's kind of like what it is, you know what I'm saying?
That's what it was. That's, you know, you hit the nail on the head. I went to a place where they seemed like it was celebration. They were looking around, houses built, people flying in, you know. They're giving lip service to the problems, but it definitely seemed like we're going to have our cake and ice cream and celebrate.
Right, and that's what it is. It's like us, you know, the people who really affected by it, you know what I'm saying, which is the poor, you know what I'm saying, we just trying to come together and really figure out, you know, what we going to do and how we going to survive and how we going to eat tomorrow. You know what I'm saying? But over on the mayor side and the Susan Taylor, you know, their present side of things, you know, they celebrating how far we done came. You know what I'm saying? They, you know, they got $100,000 in their budget to throw a party when we over here, we trying to scrub two nickels together, you know what I'm saying, to make our little event go on. You know what I'm saying? So that's where it's at. It's like they celebrating with all you know, success and achievement that they done accomplished, you know, in their eyesight. They accomplished things to them as successful. But we over here saying, no, man, we still poor. We still trying to pay these high rent prices, you know, that's down here. We trying to deal with this homelessness in the streets. You know what I'm saying? But they like, okay, well, look, we done opened up 20 houses in the housing project that used to have 18 housing units. We opened up 20, man. You don't want to celebrate those 20 we opened up? Hell no, we don't want to celebrate that. You know, you got $100,000. You got $100,000 for the Katrina Day of Presence. All right, well, look, don't worry about the Day of Presence. You know what I'm saying? Let's put this into the
Let me just remember, Day of Presence was an event here. I think people thought you said Dead Prez for a second. I was like, it's like, no, not Stick in M1. Nah, they came out here for Black August. Say that it was with y'all. It's another Day of Presence. So that was Seth's accent for people who, out here in the West who were like, what are you saying?
Right. But, yeah, you know, Day of Presence was their way of, you know, honoring. And, you know, on our side, we had the two-year anniversary, which was called 2 years later and still fighting. Because, you know, the first anniversary, the first year, we were still surviving. But now we passed survival. Now we fighting because, you know, if we don't fight for it, you know, it ain't nothing going to get handed to us. So they over there celebrating and we still fighting. And that's the difference between the two classes. You know what I'm saying?
One of the things that New Orleans folks have been burdened with is a bad reputation. And I want to know if you can put this into context. We first heard the reports of out-of-control Negroes from the Ninth Ward destroying the city during Hurricane, or in the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina. We later come to find out that those were widely exaggerated tall tales. But ever since then, we've seen, you know, that being used as an excuse to bring more police, you know, keep extra eyes on you, and to blame New Orleanians for anything. So, for example, in Houston, we've seen national reports that the crime rate in Houston has gone up because people from New Orleans is there. And, you know, they'll focus on another city like Atlanta. Oh, it's because of the New Orleans people. So now it's almost like when you say New Orleans and you say there's a need, you get a lot of people that have heard these reports and then they're like not as understanding or not, you know, they don't emphasize with you. Can you put this into context of how we should be looking at this?
Okay, so first of all, I'm going to bring us back to, you know, when you took Katrina and a few days after that, you know what I'm saying? So you got thousands of people stranded in New Orleans in the Gulf Coast area, you know, and most of these young black guys, they started off, you know, like, okay, getting people together. Let me back up a little bit. First of all, they were all just waiting also. They were waiting. Okay, waiting for the mayor to do something, waiting for the governor to do something, waiting for Bush to do something, okay? 1 day passed, okay, nothing happened. 2 day passed, nothing happened. 3 day passed, nothing happened. 4 days passed and nothing happened. So now these young black men realize, okay, we really out here on our own. And so they got these elderly people, they have kids with babies that need food and stuff. So these young black men go break into some of these stores and you know, they go and what's the word I want to use? You know,
they use the word looting.
Yeah, they use looting, but I'm gonna use the word. My brother Fred Hampton just used this word with me yesterday. You know what I'm saying? It's kind of like revolutionize. What's the word for me?
I say confiscate.
No, it ain't confiscate. It's I'm
liberate.
Liberate. Yeah, that's the word. They liberated, you know what I'm saying, some food and some waters and stuff for our people. You know what I'm saying? And so just to stay on that part right there, you know, I saw the same thing in the newspaper and on David Letterman and all this here. White people, they was, you know, finding food, but black people was looting. You know what I'm saying? But the
let me just remind people, he's referring to the famous pictures that the AP wire service took where they showed almost identical people on two different days. On the first day, it was some black folks with some bags of food, and they put, you know, New Orleans people looting. Next day, they showed some white folks with a bag of food stranded in knee-high water or chest-high water like the black guy, and they said, you know, New Orleans residents find food. And that became the reference point for, you know, Kanye's speech and also what you're talking about now.
Right. And so we had young brothers saving people, you know what I'm saying, like going to get food for the elderly. And, you know, the cops, all they see is some young black people with food or drinks in their hand. So they like, okay, look, let me stop these guys from looting, not knowing that they bringing it back to the convention center or bringing it back to a house where they got 30, 40 people stuck in one house. You know what I'm saying? So these people, they doing brave things that the government officials not doing. You know what I'm saying? So while we up in here being heroes and stuff, the police, they just see one thing. A young black man who I been knew was my enemy, you know what I'm saying, who I been targeting before the hurricane, and now is in the devastation. I'm going to go ahead and use these bullets I got to go ahead and, you know, catch me a criminal. You know what I'm saying? And so that's what the basic part of it. And just as it relates to the whole, you know, New Orleans residents in Atlanta and Houston, those areas already had a lot of, you know, crime. You know what I'm saying? And if you look at the statistics for this country, they got violent acts in every city around this country. It's up. Violent acts is up in every city around this country. So they can't say, okay, just because New Orleans residents are in this particular city, crime is up. Crime is up all across this country.
So that's something we definitely need to think about. But what has that done? Have you felt the effects of that sort of stigma?
Well, the stigma is a part of, you know, this country is growing, growing divide between Africans. You know, this is all part of they system is because, you know, 20 years ago, you know, they were saying that, you know, our youngsters, you know, they crazy. And so our older folks, our elders start saying, you know what? Maybe our youngsters is crazy. So it wasn't only the white people crossing the street when they see black people walking down the street. It was our grandfathers and grandmothers, you know, crossing the street too. So that disconnected us. You know what I'm saying? So now some of us in our 40s and 30s, we saying the same thing. Nah, man, them young kids, they crazy. So now we backing away from, you know, the younger generation. And so when the white man, when we see the white man or the cops pulling our young brothers over and putting them on the cars, you know, and really handling our brothers, you know, unjustly, you know, we don't do nothing because we done fed into the stereotype that, okay, them young brothers must be doing something wrong. You know what I'm saying? And so by us disconnecting from each other, we allow things to happen. And so if we keep letting them use their statistics, their vision, their Eurocentric way of thinking, you know, we know the media outlet is controlled by the, you know, corporate America. So I can't believe nothing that they say. If they say, you know, crime is up because of New Orleans residents, I'm not believing what you say. I'm going to believe what the Africans in Houston say. You know what I'm saying? Let them tell me what's going on. I won't get the news from my source. I won't hear all David D's show because that's the real. I won't get it from somebody I trust. I'm not going by AP or CNN. Their media is distraught. They don't have no truth in their media. I can't believe what they say. So I'm not really going to go off what the media say. I'm going to go off what the people say and what the truth is to say. What I say, Cesspool 5, I'm telling you the real from ground zero. You know what I'm saying? So if you don't get an accurate account, okay, if the white man say something that don't mean it's true, let's get both sides of the story. Let's hear what the black man got to say, and then we go from there.
Yeah, it's amazing. You know, a lot of times we will trust somebody who on so many levels is absolutely corrupt. So we'll watch Fox News, see the Bill O'Reilly show. He'll come up and say, you know, Cess4Five is a gangster rapper, and then we'll call you a gangster rapper. And then say, well, where you get that information from? From Bill O'Reilly. The same Bill O'Reilly that said Malcolm X was a, you know, terrorist? Yeah. Okay. Something to think about. You know, one of the things that's been interesting, we have presidential politics, 2008. And also you had a recent mayoral election and a lot of people ran. How does electoral politics play into this? You know, both in the past, in the recent past after Katrina with the mayoral election here and also with the presidential election especially when you had John Edwards launch his campaign from New Orleans. Barack Obama says he wants to do stuff. You know, Hillary says she wants to do stuff, but I don't know if it's resonating with y'all.
Okay, like I said earlier, whoever wins, we lose. So that pretty much tells it all. But let me just show you another element of the whole Hurricane America, you know, Katrina devastation and how it plays a role in politics. Now, this city was a predominantly, you know, African and also Democratic city. So, you know, a Republican didn't have a chance, you know, down here. But once they used this hurricane as an excuse to displace our citizens all across the country, you change the demographics, you know, of the electoral votes, you know what I'm saying? So all of these Democrats, now they submerged with the Houston Democrats. Now they submerged with the Atlanta Democrats, you know what I'm saying? And now it's less Democrats in this city. Now a Republican have a fighting chance at winning Louisiana, you know, electoral votes, you know what I'm saying? So when the mayor election came, he realized that, okay, most of my Democratic voters, they in, you know, 44 other states, you know what I'm saying? So I need to do something to get them back here. You see what I'm saying? And then when we had these other elections, you know, like for state representative and for senator, you know, which usually was held by a Democratic candidate, now the Republicans really got a fighting chance. And now, you know, some of those guys are in office because of that. But you change the whole demographics of the city when you take out hundreds of thousands of Democratic residents. So now the whole shift is changed.
But have the Democrats even done anything?
Well, they don't have any power to do anything. They
But nationally, Hillary Clinton's a senator. Barack Obama's a sitting senator. John Edwards was a senator after Katrina, and, you know, he was he a senator after Katrina? Because, yeah, Katrina happened 2005, so he might not have been in office, but still, they got those connections. What bills are they sponsoring? What sort of return to home programs? I mean, I've seen Talib Kweli go on a 15-city tour trying to get people to return home. Did Barack Obama do it? Did Hillary do it? Why not? And if not, you know, what's the story, especially since on a political level, they have something at stake?
I think politically, you know, as it relates to Hillary, you know, she could care less if Louisiana, you know, votes for her. And the same with Barack. I think they look at it like it's, you know, that's only one state. You know what I'm saying? There's only a few electoral votes. If I get them, I get them. If I don't, I don't. You know what I'm saying? And those guys are worried about self. You know, if I get into, you know, the presidential office, you know, I can, you know, push forward my agenda and get my pockets a little bigger. So the Katrina situation is not really pressing, you know, as it was last year. You know what I'm saying? It's not front page news anymore, so they don't have to, you know, put as much attention or time or focus onto those issues because it's not on the front seat of the fire no more, even though we try as hard as we can to campaign and get them to put it on the platform, which we have to do a better job as Africans in this country to put that on the platform. But they don't really care. The Bush Clinton Fund, you know, that raised billions of dollars, those dollars not getting to the people. So she done ate off Katrina already. She done ate off the people back. So she care less. You know, she got a big old, you know, she done got a big percentage of that money, and that money helped fuel her campaign. So she good off New Orleans. She don't need us right now.
Something to think about. You know, what are some of the steps from your perspective that we need to take to push this city back to its former greatness and beyond?
Well, the city had a lot of problems before. You know, Katrina, you know, this city, you know, it may look great to the people on the outside, you know what I'm saying? It was a good city with African culture and a good community, like, vibe, you know what I'm saying? But this city had poverty before Katrina. We had, you know, a lot of debt. We had a lot of crime. We had a lot of unemployment. We had a lot of people depending on the government through, you know, housing subsidies and you know, food stamps and things of that nature. So, and that's all across the country. So I think the same problem that was going on, you know, that can make this city better is the same thing that we can do in California, the same thing we can do in New York or Alabama and stuff like that. I think really we have to get ourselves together and, like, build our own nation. I think we have to get our economics together, you know what I'm saying? We have to own more of our own things, you know, total black-owned businesses, you know what I'm saying? Let's create jobs, you know what I'm saying? Let's get our own schools and stuff like that so we can push the education forward.
Does it have to be totally black-owned, or does it have to be black-owned with a particular agenda? Because we got Condoleezza Rice and Colin Powell and a lot of people like that own their own business somewhere, but their agenda ain't mine.
Well, they not black-owned. That's white-owned.
And the ideology, going back to what you said before, yeah, it's a black face, but it ain't a black ideology.
Right. But you know, it's nothing wrong with you know, being successful like what Condoleezza Rice and Colin Powell is. But I think we really gotta like remember the focus, because you know, at some point in time, like, you know, being successful, you know, you could kind of get off track. You know what I'm saying? Like, sometimes you gotta be humbled, you know what I'm saying? You know, you got to fall on your face sometimes. And I think that's all it is because ain't nothing wrong with being where she at. I think that's a good achievement for Africans to be in those positions of power, but not use your own self-interest, you know what I'm saying? If you lose your job and you get back down to ground zero where you started, you know what I'm saying? You should be proud of, okay, I did that. I went for the people, you know what I'm saying? In the white corporations, they kicked me out or whatever, you know what I'm saying? But don't just, you know, keep your foot on the backs of your people neck while they down, you know what I'm saying? So that's the whole thing. And I think people get complacent instead of, even though they went, they became mayor because they had a genuine want to help the people, but then when they got in office and they got certain things, they said, okay, well, look, I won't maintain these things, and then they put the people on the back burner. So if you get in office and get in a position of power, which is good, we want more doctors and more Condoleezza Rice and Colin Powell, but we want them to fight for us.
It's real talk there. You know, my last question, walking around New Orleans, I see that it's not just a lot of black faces here, it's a lot of brown faces. And that's been a source of tension since Katrina. Can you talk about what that's about and how y'all navigating that particular scenario, especially since a lot of blacks ain't working and they've been bringing in a lot of immigrant workers?
Well, you know, we have no control over, you know, the immigrant workers coming to the city, and we have no problem with the immigrant workers coming to the city, you know what I'm saying? You know, our problem comes from, you know, really basically the government, you know what I'm saying, you know, keeping the wages low and not including us in the rebuilding process, you know, giving blacks the contracts, you know what I'm saying, to rebuild and stuff like that, because our culture as African people, we don't care who eat. We just want to make sure all of us eat, you know what I'm saying? We don't have no beef with the brown, with the Mexicans or the immigrants or nothing like that, you know what I'm saying? We wish they wouldn't take these, you know, low-paying jobs, but also they getting screwed too, you know what I'm saying? They got these, you know, contractors hiring these guys, and then they don't pay them after they do the work and say they're going to, you know, report them to INS, you know, get them deported or whatever, you know what I'm saying? So they dealing with the same thing. They dealing with the police officers who need quotas to arrest people. So now they arresting these immigrants, you know what I'm saying? Now they getting the money per day off these guys being in jail, being incarcerated. So they done came down here thinking it's going to be, you know, yeah, we're going to get all this Katrina work. But no, you running into the same problem us blacks been fighting, you know, forever. You running into this government, you running into being deported, you being a victim of this jail system out here in New Orleans. So we support them, but we just hope, you know, we just be in solidarity and get a living wage. You know what I'm saying? Let's work for something that's livable, that we can kind of, you know, bring our families up and save up some money, you know.
We've been talking with my man Cess 4-5. Rap artist out of New Orleans, man. What's the name of your album, man? We've been talking politics, but let me give you a chance to plug your music so people can support a righteous cat.
Right, this Cess 4-5. Nothing But Fire Records, you know what I'm saying? CEO, got my own record store, my own record company. The name of my album is called The Louisiana Purchase, you know what I'm saying? So y'all be looking for that in 08. It's coming out in 08. I got a new single out right now called Like It Like That. I'm on the MySpace, MySpace / Nothing But Fire Records, which is spelled NUTHINBUTFIRERECORDS. And also hit me up on the web, www.nothingbutfirerecords.com. So that's what it is.
We out for now, folks. Peace.